Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know, is everybody ready?
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said everybody, get on up and do your stuff. You better get up.
Hey everybody, welcome to Congress College. Happy Monday to everybody. My name is Elizabeth Christ, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes on this radio show. If you're a guest it by the name Congress College, you're right. We talk almost exclusively about Congress. Well, I want to welcome folks to the chat room. Hey, Bob, I hope you're still there. I'm hearing a little bit of back feed. I hope you guys are not. I apologize for that. Can't figure it out. I've got the headset just right. So anyway, I hope it resolves itself. Anyway, welcome to Congress College, where we talk about Congress twice weekly. On the Monday show, which of course is the show you're listening to right now, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is when we recap the week. When we talk about the week coming up, and we literally talk about what will be coming up in the Senate of the United States and the House of Representatives. And then on the Friday show, same time slot, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, this is when we recap the week and we talk about what actually got done. What did the Senate end up doing? How about the House of Representatives? Did they end up doing what they said they were going to do? And you know, I do Congress College twice weekly, so you can answer this really, really simple question. Were you represented well in Washington, D.C. for the week? Because let's think about it. Let's just for 1 minute. I say this all the time. We have the greatest representative government in the world. Does it have problems now? You betcha. Does it have warts, and has it been twisted and bastardized by this current administration so that it, hardly resembles itself? Yes. But we do, nonetheless, have the best representative government in the world. But that means we have to know what our representatives are up to. We have to keep track of them. We have to keep tabs on them. So what better way than to listen to Congress College twice weekly and at least get a general idea what your member of Congress is doing? Because he's representing you. He's representing me when he's doing his work. I also do the show to familiarize folks with the free website, gradegov.com. And of course, gradegov.com lets you, guess what? Grade a member of Congress. How about your member of Congress? Would you give him or her an A, maybe a D, maybe an F? How about somebody you just heard about? Maybe you just read about them or saw them on the news. They live all the way the other side of the country. You want to give them an attaboy. You want to give them a good grade. You can do it all on gradegov.com once you figure out who you want to grade and what grades you want to give them. And again, it's the grades just like the grades we got in school, the A, B, C, D, or F. Once you figure out what grade, then the site is going to prompt you to write a letter explaining your grade. Actually, the site auto-generates a letter, does all the salutations, the date and address, email address. Dear Senator, and I always use our Senator, Dear Senator Rubio, I gave you a B today. And then you have to finish why. I always urge folks to check their spelling. Be respectful. Please be respectful. And then you know what? Your letter gets posted on gradegov.com. Your grade gets averaged and makes that senator or that House member's grade what it is. And you know what, folks, people, members of Congress do look at gradegov.com. They're always concerned about what you think of them, what I think of them. So what better way for them to figure out where they stand with their constituents than to pop over to gradegov.com. So tell your friends and family about gradegov.com. I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Well, I think we're pretty much done with the housekeeping. Again, let me say hi to the chat room, folks. Hey, Bob, I hope the reverb that I'm hearing is not really bad. It actually has gone away, so I'm hoping it's okay for you guys. Let's start out with the Senate and the House. Well, they're back. They're back in the lame duck session. The House came back today. The Senate's coming back tomorrow. But you know what the Capitol feels like? Just let me give you a little feeling, a little flair for the Capitol building. Our nation's capital, our Capitol, right now is, we already know it's transfixed with Donald Trump's election. But it's what's happening now is akin to, I don't know, high school, akin to freshmen going to college, akin to people getting admitted into their favorite fraternity. All of that is happening this week because the House of Representatives are back this week. But the new guys, the newly elected members are back this week. As a matter of fact, they have their elections. This is the House Republicans. They have their elections for the Speaker of the House, which I believe will easily be Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, tomorrow. The Democrats on the House of Representatives side are going to meet later in the week. As a matter of fact, they've made some noise that at least the Democrats in the House of Representatives are maybe thinking maybe Nancy Pelosi shouldn't be the one. So they may actually end up delaying their elections. They were supposed to be this week. They actually may end up delaying them. But the House Republicans are all back and the new ones are coming in for the vote tomorrow. And then they're figuring out where the bathroom is. They're figuring out how to navigate the building itself, where their new offices will be. And really, same with the Senate side. The Senate's coming back tomorrow. The Senate Republicans will have their vote to elect very easily Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell as their majority leader. And then later in the week, I believe Thursday also, the Senate Democrats will vote. Looks like they'll elect Chuck Schumer, the Democrat from New York, to be the minority leader. And you know who else came to the Capitol? Our president-elect, Donald Trump. Take a listen to this. This was a meeting he had with the speaker. I wish you could see it, folks. I mean, it was a pretty, pretty awesome looking just photo op. That's really kind of all it was. But take a listen here for just a minute.
How excited we are about these opportunities for the country. We had a fantastic, productive meeting about getting to work, rolling up our sleeves, and going to work for the American people. Donald Trump had one of the most impressive victories we've ever seen, and we're going to turn that victory into progress for the American people. And we are now talking about how we're going to get the ground running to make sure that we can get this country turned around and make America great again.
Well, thank you very much. And Mr. Speaker, it's been an honor. We had a meeting. I met with the president, as you know, before. That was an excellent meeting. We just spent quite a bit of time together. I think we're going to do some absolutely spectacular things for the American people. We look forward to starting. In fact, truthfully, we can't get started fast enough. And whether it's healthcare or immigration, so many different things, we'll be working on them very rapidly, and I think we'll be putting things up pretty quickly. So we had a very good meeting, a very detailed meeting. And we're going to lower taxes, as you know. And we're going to fix healthcare and make it more affordable and better. And we're going to do a real job for the public, and that's what we want to do, and that's what we're excited.
Thank you.
Well, the audio wasn't so great, in part because of all the cameras. It was a pretty neat photo. Not that it was that unique. It wasn't that unique from any other. It just, I guess my feeling was Donald Trump's never hardly been in the Capitol. You know, I met Donald Trump years ago in the Capitol, but it's not like he is a familiar face in the United States Capitol. So the Capitol is all a buzz. I'm just going to leave it that way for you all. It is a buzz. It's like freshman year in college, everybody checking in, getting your classes. It's all of that with grins on their faces. The ones that were defeated, they've had a weekend to sort of figure it out. They're over it. Maybe not deep down, but outwardly they're over it. So the euphoria definitely takes over. It definitely takes over. The whole building feels that way. So the Senate this week, though, is going to be starting to work on the continuing resolution, the bill that funds the federal government past December 9th, and they need to start working on that. They're also going to consider a bill that deals with medical trials, basically, helping out with medical trials. As I said, the leadership will meet tomorrow to elect the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell. You have one Senate seat that is yet to be determined. This one will be determined December 10th. This is the state of Louisiana. The Republican John Neely Kennedy versus Foster Campbell, the Democrat. Those two will face off December 9th because the Louisiana law says if no one gets over 50% of the voting, you have to have a runoff. And the Democrats, quite frankly, have been able to game that over years and years and years of election cycles. They have what they call a jungle election where there's tons of people on the ballot so that no one ever gets 50. So they'll have a runoff December 10th. I would think Louisiana legislature would think about changing this because it's very expensive for them to have basically another whole election. But that will be December 10th. Likely the Senate makeup will be 52-48. And let's go over to the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives is doing a couple of neat things this week. They're doing a National Clinic Care Commission Act, a bill also improving access for maternity care, dealing with nursing workforce. But here's something I think is really interesting the House is going to take on. They are going to vote as to whether or not the Treasury Department should have granted Boeing the first U.S. approval to sell jetliners to Iran in over 40 years. That's right. Boeing now has the approval to sell airplanes, jetliners, to Iran, and that we haven't been, nobody's been ever, there's never been a business, a big business that's been able to do this from the United States since 1979. Since the Islamic Revolution, where they took U.S. hostages, the end of the Carter administration. Well, the Treasury Department granted Airbus and Boeing the ability to sell, I believe it's up to 80 planes to Iran's national carrier, which is Iran Air. Airbus confirmed that it will sell 17 planes to them. And then Boeing is looking at another rebuilding their fleet so that they can sell. The total actually is 118 planes. So the House of Representatives is going to consider whether they squash the deal. This is as a result of the Iran deal. This is the result of relaxing the sanctions. This is the result of the nuclear program. In exchange for the sanctions relief, this is what they're allowed to do. So this is part of the Iran nuclear deal. And the House of Representatives is going to consider whether they want to put a kibosh on allowing Boeing to do this. It won't make that much difference right now, because even if it were to pass the House and then pass the Senate, it would go to the president and the president would veto it. But that won't be the case likely after January 20th. And what it will do is send a signal to Boeing and Airbus that maybe we shouldn't be ramping up production because it might not likely go through. So I think that's part of the reason why the speaker has decided to make this part of their legislation for this week. And again, Pelosi's got to figure out if she's going to end up being the Speaker of the House. They have about 50 House Democratic women. And many of them have said they're not sure they want her to be the number two in the House of Representatives, the number one for the Democrats, the House Minority Leader. But, you know, without Hillary Rodham Clinton, without her being anywhere in the forefront, thank goodness, she becomes the most powerful woman for the Democratic Party. So maybe they ought to rethink that. I have no opinion one way or the other. I don't think she's good for the country. Has she been a pretty good Democratic leader? Actually, honestly, yeah, she raises lots of money. So we'll see how that is. Likely by Friday, we can talk a little bit more about that. You know, I talked about the effect that Donald Trump has had. He has changed the Republican Party in an amazing way. Hillary Rodham Clinton has changed the Democratic Party in an amazing way. And the same with Barack Obama. Let me just talk about this for 1 second. Donald Trump's effect, his being in the political process, the effect of Donald Trump has changed the Republicans from being down 10% of the electorate to up maybe as much as 6%. That's building up the Republican Party. How about Clinton? She gave basically no direction. All she could say was Donald Trump was bad. And then all of her corrupt allegations, her email scandals, she has weakened the Democratic Party. Her only message was income inequality. That was her narrative. Here's something that we need to think about, folks. That's never, in my opinion, ever going to fly in this country. We're never going to love the idea of taking other people's stuff. If we didn't earn it, in effect, taking it. Coveting other people's stuff. You know, we're a Christian nation. For the most part, we are a Christian nation. One of our Ten Commandments, do not covet our neighbor. Do not covet. In effect, the income equality, the redistribution of wealth is coveting somebody else's stuff, their money, their objects, because you don't have it. We are not about that, folks. So I think her message was dead on arrival. The United States of America is giving the opportunity to go out and earn the stuff that you want, not take it from other people. And then you talk about Obama's effect. 7% of the country believe that Barack Obama put the country in the right direction. 7%. This is a different poll than do you like him? His likability was in the 50s. But how many, what is the percent of the people polled that say we're going in the right direction? 7%. That's pretty bad, folks. That's pretty bad. And the damage can be seen in the governor's races. It can be seen in the House. It can be seen in the Senate. You know, I also talked about the cheesehead effect. Let's think about this. Reince Priebus was tapped to be the White House chief of staff. That is a huge, huge job. He obviously was the RNC chairman and helped shepherd Donald Trump to victory. But you know what? He was also there to help Scott Walker and his victory when he was being challenged and recalled. He had to win twice. Remember, Scott Walker is the governor of Wisconsin, the Republican governor of Wisconsin. Reince Priebus, chief of staff from Wisconsin. Scott Walker, the Republican governor from Wisconsin, is also chairman of the RGA, the Republican Governors Association. Praise God. I want the RGA to work so well with the White House, to work so well with Congress. And let's think of another cheesehead. Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. So you've got Reince Priebus, chief of staff. You've got the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. You've got the Republican Governors Association, who, by the way, have 36 governors now. The head of the Republican Governors Association, Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin. Chief of staff to the Speaker of the House, Dave Hoppe. Used to be chief of staff to Trent Lott, the Senate Majority Leader. In other words, he's a Senate guy. Used to be chief of staff to the Senate Majority Whip, John Kyle. He's a Senate guy. He's a cheesehead. So the Senate and the House have a bridge with a cheesehead. The Republicans, governors, have a bridge to the White House through the chief of staff, a cheesehead, Reince Priebus, or through the Speaker, a cheesehead. I love it, folks. I absolutely love it. You know, Scott Walker's going to have a lot on his plate. The midterm races obviously unified the Republican control in Washington, but with him as chairman of the Republican Governors Association, he will have an amazing opportunity to have the Republican governors work with the Congress, to have the Republican governors work. He can unify Washington with the Republican governors. That's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for all of them to partner together. All of this Wisconsin partnership can and should be amazing. It absolutely should be amazing. Think about this. I know you don't want me to talk about the elections, the upcoming elections. But the 2018 elections, 27 of the 36 governors up for re-election are going to be Republicans. So Scott Walker, head of the Republican Governors Association, has got a lot to do. But he can do amazing things working through the speaker, another Wisconsinite. Working through the speaker's chief of staff, Dave Hoppe, another Wisconsinite. Working through the chief of staff, Reince Priebus, another Wisconsinite. The damage that Barack Obama did was amazing. They had the Senate Republicans, when he took office, were at 60 seats, filibuster proof. The Senate Republicans only had 21 governors when Barack Obama took office almost 8 years ago. They had a majority in the House. Now fast forward to now, 36 Republican governors. A Republican Senate again. A Republican House again. He has decimated the Democratic Party. All right, let me go back to Congress for a minute. Donald Trump needs Congress to do some of his major campaign issues. But immigration reform, not so much. He can do a lot of his immigration reform through executive order, but more importantly, just applying the laws that are on the books. Arresting and deporting illegal criminal immigrants using the laws already on the books. But what do you do with these mayors that say sanctuary cities are here to stay? Listen to Rahm Emanuel.
It is for families that are anxious. It is important for children and adolescents that are unsure because of Tuesday to understand that the city of Chicago is your home. You are always welcome in this city. Always. To be clear about what Chicago is, it always will be a sanctuary city. To all those who are, after Tuesday's election, very nervous, is filled with anxiety, has been spoken to, you are safe in Chicago. You are secure in Chicago, and you are supported in Chicago. The city continues will provide services, and your ability to access those services will always be there. They will not waver or change because of administration. They may change, but our values do not. This is a city of inclusion. And while you are here, and you call Chicago home, and you call yourself a resident of the city of Chicago, your legal status does not determine whether your kids can go to school. Your legal status does not determine whether you can access public services. And this is a representative of what it means to be a community of support. You are safe, you are secure, and you're supported in the city of Chicago.
Well, guess what, Mayor Emanuel? Donald Trump, as president, can do stuff to your city to try to keep you from being that sanctuary city. Let's go back to Ronald Reagan. Let's go back to Mothers Against Drunk Driving. They wanted the drinking age to be raised to 21. It was 18 in most states. Basically, what Ronald Reagan did was tell the states, if you don't raise your drinking age, I'll withhold federal highway funds. It was an idea written in part by Elizabeth Dole, who was Secretary of Transportation at the time. So you want to call that extortion? You want to call that hostage taking? You want to call that strangling the city by talking about taking away federal funds? Whatever you want to talk about, however you want to categorize it, the bottom line is all 50 states raised their drinking age to 21 because they needed their highway funds. I believe sanctuary cities will feel the pain, the wrath of Donald Trump. He is as serious as a heart attack about saying, if you are an illegal and criminal, you're going home. You're going back home. You're not staying here. The 2 million that we know are illegal criminals hiding in these sanctuary cities, he says, will be sent home. I have no doubt about it. So he actually doesn't need Congress for that necessarily. He can do a lot of that by executive order. But there are things he will need Congress for. Take a listen to this. This is about 2 minutes. This talks about the three major things that he does need Congress for. And, of course, healthcare is one. You'll hear. The beginning of it is.
Agreements with China and many others will be totally renegotiated. That includes renegotiating NAFTA to get a much better deal for America, and we'll walk away if we don't get that kind of a deal.
He can use executive action to change some modest parameters on trade, but it's the follow-through on having a 35 to 40% tariff on goods that he can't do without Congress. So he can make changes at the margins, but to be able to really follow through in a way that the country would feel it, he's going to have Congress on his side.
The Repeal and Replace Obamacare Act. Fully repeal Obamacare and replace it with health savings accounts.
Obamacare is going to be on the menu. Exactly what they will do, I don't know. And so that's really the ongoing issue. And, you know, whether the Democrats would agree, at least enough to be able to not filibuster and try to put a wrench in the works. And so that's really that requires an extra level of negotiation.
The first part of my child care plan allows for every parent or family in America, including adoptive parents and foster parent guardians, to deduct their child care expenses from their income taxes. That's a first.
We're really hopeful that not only with funding, but resources necessary to expand quality child care to families, that there will be receptivity in Congress on both sides of the aisle.
There you go. So he's going to need them for some, obviously. He's going to need the Congress for some of the big stuff, and I think he'll have it. Again, we just talked about the Wisconsin connection. It's all over Congress. Here's another Wisconsin connection, the Cheesehead connection. Ron Johnson, the senator from Wisconsin, won. That was one that they said Russ Feingold, the former senator who he had beat 6 years earlier, very, very wealthy man. They figured that he would win hands down. How did Ron Johnson win? He used the Wisconsin state governor, Scott Walker's, metadata. What's metadata? It's data about data, basically. They used the metadata that had been put in place by another Wisconsinite, Reince Priebus. When Reince Priebus became head of the RNC, inherited an RNC from Michael Steele, who, quite frankly, had not kept up with the metadata. They were so far behind. I said at the time, it was like a bunch of little old ladies in the back room licking stamps. That was the Republican RNC versus the Democratic RNC flying around on their Blackberries and their iPhones and their iPads. iPads versus licking stamps in the back room. That was the difference. Reince Priebus vaulted with Voter Vault and other databases, vaulted the Republican Party into where it is now. Ron Johnson, the Republican senator from Wisconsin, used that data. He used that data to know where he was falling short in certain suburban areas. He used it to decide to run positive ads late in the campaign. It's amazing what you can use if you have good voter data. All right, folks, I'm going to leave you with a funny one. Ding dong, the witch is dead. Have a great, great week. I will talk to you on... Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for listening to Congress College. I'll talk to you on Friday. Stay tuned.